Solar Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Moeller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Moeller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Moeller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Moeller Program. They're starting them out young. A lot of parents right now are beginning to think that they've got to have their kids in the right educational program from the crib onward. So they've got them listening to the Mozart baby and all that kind of stuff in which you're supposed to be teaching your children how to think while they're in the crib. And then you want them literate and reading books by the time they hit two. And maybe calculus by the time they hit kindergarten. In all seriousness, what you've got is competition now in many metropolitan areas where parents are absolutely convinced that if they don't get their kid in the right preschool program, then they won't get in the right kindergarten, then they won't get in the right prep school, and they won't get in the right college, and they'll be a failure in life. Now, I realize that to many people listening to this, that may sound like an issue far, far away. But like every major social trend, it trickles down to where we live. And here's how I think it's trickling down. I think we have lost an understanding of what childhood is all about. I think we have lost an understanding of what we should expect of a preschooler and what that part of life is supposed to be about and what that child actually should be learning. I think we as Christians have a stake not only in the insanity of believing you got to get your kid in the right preschool or he's going to be a failure in life. But why is it that many Christians are concerned about that and they're not concerned about teaching their children in those formative eras the most basic truths of God's Word? I think it's going to lead to a fascinating discussion. To join us today, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Confusion over childhood is our topic today. And it's not only in this sense of panic that preschoolers might not be ready for school. I mean, just think about that for a moment. Ready for school? What did that look like at five? To exactly what we should be teaching our children, especially in the home. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York City is making big news. Out-of-wedlock births, he says, are a major factor in poverty. And in his city, there in New York and its environs, he's pointing to skyrocketing rates of out-of-wedlock births, and he is correctly pointing to the fact that this has immediate, very damaging effects upon individual lives and upon the society. He says it's time for political leaders to start talking about this problem, but then he took it a little bit further. And in this case, Mayor Michael Bloomberg himself, a divorced billionaire dad, suggested that the way to get these dads to take their responsibility, as they're often called deadbeat dads, is to pay them. That's right. In other words, he's suggesting that society, and it appears to mean the state, the government, should take on the responsibility of paying dads to dad. Now, I don't know what you think about this, but the bottom line of my analysis is that if you have to pay them to do what's right, they're not going to do it very well anyway. If there's no sense of social obligation, you're not going to be able to entice them back with a little bit of money. Worse than that, I think, is the assumption that you can destroy marriage and try to maintain its benefits. I think that's the big issue. Let's just sideline marriage and try to replace marriage with money. Let's take away the contract that says I do for a lifetime and replace it with I'll raise these kids for a little while. I just don't think that's going to work. Jim Wooten of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution agrees with Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York that the out-of-wedlock births have to be discussed. He says this, marriage reduces poverty. Now because we've reached the tipping point where the crisis of out-of-wedlock births is so deeply rooted, few public figures who wish to cultivate a following dare mention it. So they walk around it and talk around it. But sooner or later, leaders, rich and poor, married and divorced, do have to start the conversation, and we have to encourage them. This is a very interesting story out of Orlando, Florida, Trinity Preparatory School, while we're talking about elite academies. That is an Episcopalian tradition school there in the metropolitan Orlando area, has planned a student production of La Cage aux Folles. It was to be performed on campus, but after the local bishop, Episcopal Bishop John Howe, had complained that the comedy was inappropriate for an Episcopal institution or school, it was moved off campus. As the Orlando Sentinel reports, the production was to open last weekend at the private school near Winter Park, but was canceled at the request of Bishop John Howe, head of the Episcopal Diocese of Central Florida. Howe, a leader among the nation's conservative Episcopal bishops, thought the comedy, listen to this, featuring a gay couple and actors dressed in drag was inappropriate for a Christian school, end quote. Now, figure that. Here you have an Episcopal bishop actually doing what you would think a bishop is called and hired and appointed and elected to do, and that is guard the church and teach the church. He has a school that is associated with his church made up of a bunch of teenagers who are about to put on a play that celebrates homosexuality, features a gay couple, and also has other actors dressed in drag. He said that he thought it was inappropriate for a Christian school. Now get this, the kickback. We have here the leader of the school, that is Headmaster Craig Mon, saying, "We regret the scheduling of this performance has been interpreted as a departure from our 40-year history as an Episcopal school. The students who worked hard to prepare for this play had neither a political or a social agenda," end quote. Well, let me ask the key question, Mr. Headmaster. Then who did have the agenda? Because this play did not drop from Venus onto the agenda of your school. Somebody decided to do this. And I think you're probably right, Mr. Headmaster, that it wasn't the students necessarily who did this. But this means that someone whose salary is paid under your employ did. Now, the kickback is really interesting here. Listen to this. I'm going to read directly from the newspaper. "The decision to cancel the show, a culmination of Trinity Prep's summer theater program, angered some students, parents, and alumni," now listen to this, "who questioned why Howe," that's the bishop, "should dictate shows at the independent school." They also said the award-winning musical, which opened on Broadway in 1983, listen to these words carefully, you're going to love them, "promoted tolerance and family values, even if not of the traditional sort." You got to love that. Family values, even if not of the traditional sort, which means what? It could mean anything. But I find it very illuminating to hear you have parents who say, "What's this bishop doing?" Suggesting that he ought to have a say in what goes on in a school that claims to be Episcopal when he's the Episcopal bishop. You know, this is the kind of insanity we now face. We now live in a world in which everything's turned upside down. When a student in school gets in trouble, it's the school that's blamed. The parent doesn't take the side of the school and the authority, the teacher, the administrator. Instead, the parent's far more likely to say, "Well, why are you oppressing poor little junior here?" We have this complete upturning of values. Instead of parents being outraged that some administrator or teacher chose this as an appropriate play for teenagers in an Episcopal high school, they instead complain that the bishop actually intervened in this situation. Venus Magazine has been, for a number of years, a publication for black lesbians. Very, very interesting. The latest issue, however, features editor and publisher Charlene Cothran on the cover with the headline, "Redeemed! 10 Ways to Get Out of the Life If You Want Out." Now, you know there's got to be a story there. For 13 years, Venus has been the only national magazine particularly focused on gay and lesbian issues with a specific focus on African-American lesbians. It was established by Charlene Cothran, a dynamic and outspoken gay rights activist, according to the Utney Reader. The national circulation, about 35,000. But something happened. She came to have a conversion experience to salvation through the Lord Jesus Christ. This is how Utney Reader, a magazine of the left, reports it. But then Cothran made her startling revelation, quote, "I have recently experienced the power of change that came over me since I completely surrendered to the teachings of Jesus Christ. As a believer of the Word of God, I fully accept and have always known that same-sex relationships are not what God intended for us." Very, very interesting. How's the left responding? Well, Utney Reader says, "Cothran's reversal is especially devastating given the relatively conservative religious upbringing of many black gays and lesbians. One of the core functions of Venus, that's the magazine, was to offer hope to African Americans who often feel, quote, excommunicated by our church community." Well, black lesbians, according to the story, have reacted to the publisher's conversion with a decidedly religious bent, according to this. Ms. Cothran said, "I stood to lose everything, my income and my livelihood, my friends, my whole life. I gave up everything." She says now she's waiting for God to show her how he plans to do something with the magazine. Very interesting to see what happens there, but I just have to tell you that there are some remarkable opportunities for Christian witness in this world. There are some remarkable opportunities to demonstrate before the watching world how Jesus Christ can completely transform a life. But I can't today, right this minute, think of anything more spectacularly presented as an opportunity for that witness than for the publisher of Venus Magazine to come out and say, I'm now a completely committed follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. I have to get out of that life in order to know the new life that comes in Christ. As a believer in the Bible, I have to accept what the Bible teaches. Now that's a witness. Back with your calls. This is the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, there are all kinds of angles to the back-to-school story. There is, of course, the angle of what kind of school to choose. And that's a big question for parents. Is it a private school, public school, Christian school, homeschool? That's a big question. But there are other big questions out there, too. And one of the biggest of those questions has to do with when really structured formal education should start. And what we should consider should be the role of that period of life known as early childhood. Because what's happening is that we have education, in a formal sense, schooling even, being transferred down younger and younger so that children find themselves in institutional educational settings at very, very young ages. Now, what I'm going to talk about here could step on some toes. And there are a lot of well-intentioned parents who are doing what they think is right. But I just want to raise some basic questions here. First of all, I want to really question the mentality that says that you've got to have a kid who's a spectacular success in kindergarten or he's going to be a failure in life. Boston Magazine this month, cover story, the best schools, got to start them young, why it's never too early to stress about your child's education. And also in this, and this is just a picture of what's the part of conversation in a major metropolitan area, in this case Boston. It's got a listing of all these wonderful elite little preschool programs that you might want to get your child into. But it just so happens that the magazine starts out with just the right issue. This is what it says. Not so long ago, in what was a gentler, more forgiving era, the good children of Boston didn't face their first make-or-break interview until they were fully formed college aspirants or at least looking to sew up a spot in the prep school they're choosing. Now the decisive moment happens a bit earlier, say at about 2.5 years old. The initial steps to that Harvard diploma, many parents are convinced, are taken in preschool, and so wherever their little one enrolls. But we're getting ahead of ourselves, because before they enroll, obviously, they have to get in. In other words, parents better start on this very, very early. There's another very interesting story in New York Magazine from several weeks ago indicating that some parents are going to extremes. There are charges of parents trying to bribe admissions officers, not in colleges, in preschools, in order to get their children in preschools. I want to question this whole mentality. You see, I want to suggest that you're not going to know at age 5 if the child is going to be a spectacular academic success or a failure. A child at 5 is a very unformed little creature. And I think, and this is the second point, and this is where I think some parents might not agree with me at all, but I want to tell you, I think kids at those young ages are not ready for institutionalized educational settings, period. I think this is what God made home for. I think the most important education a young child needs is the education that he or she receives from mom and dad and brothers and sisters at home. The third thing I want to suggest is that the focus on this kind of secular academic achievement is very short-sighted for Christian parents. Because our concern ought not so much to be just whether they can read or add, but whether they know anything about the Bible and the Christian faith. We have parents that in generations past would have been concerned with catechizing their children, raising their children, educating their children in the Christian faith, who now don't have anything to do with that. Instead, they're trying to make sure they get into Harvard by getting in the right preschool through an interview at 2.5. I want to ask you a question. How do you interview a toddler for admission to your preschool program? What does that interview sound like? I think this is a definition of social insanity. You know, quite frankly, I think the entire society needs to take a baby aspirin and step back and look at this and wonder what in the world has happened to us if we are interviewing 2.5-year-olds for admission to elite preschool programs. There's more. The Baltimore Sun just this last week reporting that kindergarten is now becoming a very rigorous educational experience for many children, both in public and in private schools. 5-year-olds are now expected to conclude their kindergarten graduation with some of the same educational markers that just a very few short years ago were what marked the first and second grade. Because these parents and schools are now both telling and being told that if they don't have kids who can do these things at the kindergarten, they're going to get left behind in future generations. It's all about competition. I think it's the wrong kind of competition. You have one specialist here. This is Kathy Hirsch-Pasek at Temple University saying, kindergarten has become the new first grade. We're so afraid that if we don't shove facts in, the children will fall forever behind, and schools have whipped themselves into an academic frenzy to push students to learn faster and earlier. Now, while we're on the topic of the damage here, let me suggest to you something. There are multiple levels, I think, of misconstrual, misconception, and damage here. But one of them is that children are ready at these ages to be institutionalized at all. And secondly, boys in particular, they have a hard enough time sitting still in school when they're in the 11th grade. But let's move back from when they're 16 to when they're 3. And let's ask whether that kind of structure is really what these little boys, and for that matter, little girls too, are ready for. And if they're there, what are they missing? If they're in this educational context in an institutional setting, what are they missing when they'd be at home? What are they missing just in terms of the experience of being a preschooler? What are we saying when we push kids? It's one thing to push our college students. Boy, you know, every parent knows the temptation to push that. We're paying so much for your tuition. We're paying so much for this experience. This is a make or break issue because these grades really matter. You know, that's something a parent told me not long ago. He said, you know, I finally said to my son, no one's going to throw up your English grade from the 7th grade. But someone is going to be looking at that in college when you try to get into law school. No, we recognize that is a difference. But is a kid now going to be a failure at 3 if, after all, they actually get in the right preschool and maybe she just doesn't set records there? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from some of you about how you are thinking about this. I'd love to hear from some Christian parents. Are you feeling this kind of pressure? I'm also hearing from homeschool parents who are telling me that they are getting this kind of pressure because when they look at the kind of benchmarks that they're trying to use in knowing, you know, how they're pacing their children in education, they're being told that this is what they should know. And here's the deal. If you're a homeschooler, you don't have any idea whether the kids who are in formal school, whether public or private or Christian, in the same grade are actually doing this. All you know is that some state or some bureaucracy has set this as a standard. So it's very, very difficult to put all this together. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. What are we saying when we interview 2.5-year-olds for preschool programs? What does it say about us? What does it say about our understanding of children? And what is it we should think about that child anyway? What does that child need? What do preschool children need from us in terms of education? Who should be doing the teaching? What kind of curriculum should we be worried about? One that gets them ready to read? Well, that's a good thing. How about one that gets them ready to face the challenges they're going to encounter as a 5 or 6-year-old when they really do get into school? How about let's teach them something they're not going to hear in school? They really need to hear from mom and dad. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We've got calls coming in from all over the country, and I want to hear from you. The phone number is 877-893-TALK. It is a fascinating subject, and once again, this kind of development really tells us a great deal about ourselves. A magazine cover story, a headline story in the local newspaper, becomes a mirror in which we see our own society. It's time for Intelligent Christian Conversation about what this says about childhood. The phone number, 877-893-TALK. Back with your calls.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to get right to your calls. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I want you to hear this, though. This is from Alexander Robbins, her book, The Overachievers, The Secret Lives of Driven Kids. She says, for thousands of families, school admissions processes begin before a child turns one. In several cities, that's how manic the competition has grown to get into elite preschools and kindergarten programs. When private preschools that accept children as young as two encounter parents who start searching for the right program years in advance. If they have their heart set on a particular preschool, parents have been known to try to sign up their child to be on a waiting list as soon as pregnancy is confirmed. So a little piece of paper comes back with the right color, and you run right down to get in line at the preschool. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Calling from Cedar Bluff, Nebraska's Tressa. Go ahead, Tressa.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to comment. I think it's much more important to focus on building a strong Christian foundation for our children. By the time they reach first, second, and third grade, there'll be more than enough time to focus on their academic education, because they are going to stumble and fall, and they need to have that strong foundation to fall back on versus whether or not they know their ABCs and 1, 2, 3s.
Well said. I think it's a great point, Teresa. Let's go to Orlando, Florida, where Michael's on the line. Go ahead, Michael.
Hi there. I was actually talking about this today in a class at the University of Central Florida, with this in regards to magnet programs as well, that there is, just seems to be a byproduct of like a capitalist-driven society where kids are trying to be pushed into the workforce earlier and earlier and separate the mediocre kids from the kids who are brilliant to figure out what they want to do. And it's just, you're asking at such a young age, and it's just, I think it's damaging because there's so many other things that they need to be learning at that age and building ties with their families and things like that. And, you know, a lot of kids don't shine at 3 years old. They don't shine at 12 years old or 15 years old. So,
Michael, I really appreciate that point. And in fact, you actually went where I was going to ask. I was going to ask if you thought it just, was it three? I think you're exactly right. It's later on. You are a college student right now. Let me ask you, do you think that you were really academically concerned when you were five?
Absolutely not. And I think a bigger issue, too, is that you don't know what you want at that age. At 19, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was 2.5 years into college as a different major before I switched into what I am now, which is English literature. And, I mean, so definitely at 5, no. Like I said, at 19, I had no idea yet.
That's a great call. Appreciate hearing from you, Michael. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, where Amy is listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Amy.
Oh, hi, Mr. Mohler. Thank you for taking my call. And the reason for my call is I feel so strongly about this topic. I have two children, both of whom which went to a private Christian school. I pulled my son in the third grade because of this performance, this high performance situation. And for my son, it was causing esteem issues, self-esteem issues.
Now, let me ask you, how old is your son now?
He is 9 years old.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you and put you on the spot here. Has there been a total transformation in those last, year or couple of years? Has he become all of a sudden Mr. Academic?
No. Let me tell you, my friends there has been a total transformation in his self-esteem. But academically, he doesn't love school any differently. But his esteem, my friends have said he is a quieter, gentler person.
Well, that says a lot about your concern as a mom, and I appreciate the fact that you took the initiative, Amy. I think you did the right thing in understanding that your son was not thriving in that environment and putting him in one where he might do better. You know, maybe I can give a gift to some parents here, and that is that if you're having a child who you don't think is just setting all the academic records and all the scholastic hallmarks at some early grade and in elementary school, kindergarten, preschool, or even middle school, even in high school, just isn't absolutely excited. I want to tell you, as a college and seminary president, that does not mean they never will be. I could point to an awful lot of students on the campus I lead, especially young men, who weren't excited about anything about school until something happened and they caught the bug. Now, I'm not saying that means we don't push them, we don't encourage them, we don't hold them accountable. I'm not saying we don't hold before them a vision of learning that's exciting, but I am saying don't panic. The next thing I want to tell you is a lot of kids don't read, especially a lot of boys don't read, because what they're told to read isn't interesting. I guarantee you, you'll notice that they run off with the right kind of book, and they don't want to put it down. Back with your calls. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. To join the discussion, call 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Boy, this is fascinating stuff. I have before me something that's just absolutely fascinating. It is a report card. It was issued on November the 3rd, 1883, and it is from St. George's School in Ascot, in England, and it's the fifth grade. And the boy about whom this report card is given didn't do too well. Evidently, his behavior was particularly bad. This is what he says. He says that he has latterly been very naughty, underlined very. On the whole, has made progress. Very unfit, he says here. Greatly improved, but very unfit. His work is just not very good. And he goes on and says that he's a smart boy, but he just doesn't work very hard. He's unfocused. Well, you might be encouraged to know that that's the fifth grade report card for Winston Spencer Churchill. I think it's safe to say that he went on to bigger and better things. A failure in the fifth grade did not mean failure in life, as he went on not only to become the greatest leader, perhaps, of the West in the 20th century, British Prime Minister in two separate terms, but also to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. So the fifth grade failure was a great latter-day success. Alexandra Stanley, in her book on the overachieving children, writes about this, and you'll love this. There's a frenzy over school admissions, and this is the craziness. I'm reading from her text here. She says, throughout this and the next admission meeting, I observed the comments about candidates ranged from positives, and you're talking about preschoolers here, positives like, it's nice to see a girl with a passion for dinosaurs, to negatives like the evaluation that a boy was, quote, a serious child, small muscles, underdeveloped, difficult to understand, unfocused, and young. Okay, you see, I am of the odd opinion that most three-year-olds are young. I don't think that should count against them. Back to her text, she says they took into account a nursery school's concern about a child who, quote, does not seem to have a special friend in school, lacks initiative, usually wanders, and is intractable. They discuss children's social skills and ability to share materials, problem solve, take the initiative, and exhibit leadership behavior. Now, this is a serious conversation. These people are paid money to evaluate whether three-year-olds have leadership potential. And they criticize a three-year-old who, quote, usually wanders. Now, I'm with the kid. I got to tell you here, my sympathy is entirely with this kid. Listen to this. They debated how to help a child whose mother wouldn't share the results of her child's speech evaluation with his nursery school. They reminded one another to keep diversity in mind, including children of same-sex parents. Some children received unqualified praise, some posed concerns, and others were put into temporary purgatory. There's something deeply sick about a society that puts preschoolers into purgatory, academically speaking, because they're just not up to snuff in terms of their academic work. I said there's another problem here. It's not only what is happening, it's what's not happening. You see, I'm concerned for a lot of Christian parents that we, too, are buying into the idea that what's most important is the kind of head knowledge of math and reading and all the rest. And, boy, I believe in that. Don't question for a moment. I believe in the importance of that. But let's not leave the first things undone in teaching our children the things of God. And as Christian parents, you know that's going to be a chief accountability. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We've had callers who have shared of their own experiences. I especially appreciated the kind of call that comes with a first person, a mom who said, I had to pull my son out of school because this was damaging to him in terms of their expectations. And then to hear a young man who said, I didn't know what I wanted to do and wasn't real serious about all this academic stuff till I was 19 years old. So if nothing else, maybe we can help some parents out there to calm down a little bit, to step back and say, maybe a kid is a kid. Maybe it just isn't natural for all kids to take to this stuff immediately. And especially, again, when we're talking about boys, it's just unnatural for them to sit still in a classroom. And part of the problem there is a feminized classroom when there are other things on their mind. Now, that raises a different issue as well. And speaking of boys and in classrooms, Slate Magazine has an interesting article by Tim Hartford. And he's writing about the studies that are showing the differences between single-sex classrooms and coeducational classrooms. And he is the father of girls, and he comes to the conclusion, given the research, that putting boys in with girls damages the girls because the boys take up so much time. Now, listen to this. Boys benefit from being in a classroom with girls, but girls do not benefit from being in a classroom with boys. That's his argument. Boys pollute the educational system, it seems, for a number of unmysterious reasons. They wear down teachers, disrupt classes, and ruin the atmosphere for everyone. And more boys are worse than fewer boys, not because they egg each other on, but simply because more of them can cause more trouble in total. He ends saying, a social planner might thus conclude that all education should be single sex. The difficulty is to combine this perspective with the principle of parental choice. I have the answer, a congestion charge style tax on parents who insist on polluting girls' education with their testosterone-fueled little monsters. The money could go toward hiring extra teachers and riot police. He's written, that article is written tongue-in-cheek. We can understand what he's about there. But again, here you have the recognition from a parent that things are different. And you're likely to find more girls at these ages who really say they love school and love things academic than boys. And I'm going to argue that at least a part of that is because of the feminized, and by that I don't mean just feminist, I mean feminized context of the school, especially the elementary school. And that's why, again and again on this program, I try to point to some things I think would be helpful as resources in understanding that if the boy's not reading, maybe there is a reading disability. Maybe there is some kind of learning problem. But maybe there's just nothing that interests him. Maybe the stuff he's asked to read is about stuff that doesn't interest boys. And so pay attention to the kind of thing that is likely to interest a boy. By the way, at my website today at albertmiller.com, I have an article that I think a lot of folks may find interesting. It's a new feature on my blog, Ex Libris, which is a report on some books that I think intelligent people will want to know about. Today I write about two books that offer new perspectives on World War II. One of them is The Forgotten 500 by Gregory Freeman, and then the book 1945 by Gregor Dallas. And we're going to try to have both of these authors on at some point to talk about the stories behind their books, because they are really interesting, and more than that, they help us to understand the contours of the world we know even now as World War II continues to shape the world as it is. One of the interesting things about these two books is I think a lot of men who think they don't like to read will find that they like to read these two books. They're about war and drama and stuff that matters. Back with some final thoughts. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Let me ask if you recognize this. From Puccini's Turandot, that's Nessun Dorma, and singing it, of course, Luciano Pavarotti. The king of the high seas, as he was known, who died just over the last day, early this morning, in Modena in northern Italy at age 71. He had suffered from pancreatic cancer. Now, what's the point of particularly reflecting on Luciano Pavarotti today? Well, let's just remember that God, for his glory, gives some people incredible gifts. This was a man whose natural vocal range included, within his tenor range, that high C. You know, there are people who would give their entire life savings just to be able to sing like that. There are singers whose range falls just short of that high C, and thus they are failures in the opera and unable to enjoy the kind of fame that Pavarotti enjoyed. I think one of the things that made Luciano Pavarotti so successful as a singer and as an artist is that he enjoyed it so much. If you saw him sing, whether you saw him live or on television or in some other setting, you saw a man who knew he had a gift, and he gave it. He shared it. Like many artists, he had a very interesting life, and in his case, he was often criticized by the opera establishment for a very limited repertoire. But the reality is, he knew who he was, he knew what he liked to sing, and he really relished the fact that there were a lot of people who would actually pay money to come hear him sing it. He may have, in many ways, helped to save opera in the late 20th century by the force of his personality along with the giftedness of his voice. It's just a reminder to us that each one of us is a steward of what God has given us. But to some are given gifts such as Luciano Pavarotti's voice. To others, it is a different gift, the gift of empathy in being a mother, the gift of organization in being a leader, the gift of oratory in being a speaker, the gift of friendship. But just come to know that that gift is not something that was produced by what scientists will describe as evolution or social conditioning or social determinism. It's a gift from the Creator who made you in his image and would have you to use your gift with as much joy as Luciano Pavarotti used his, and to share it with equal joy as well. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.